Now, let's talk about bacteria. So, good morning. It has been such a festive month. It's been so many fun things are happening here, and that's always true, but lately it's been excruciatingly wonderful for us to just have so much joy together. So the theme for the week is growth. We've added the first word on the three-ring circus, so you can see that we're emphasizing growth today, and I loved how everything tied together. Excellent reading, perfect music. Everything is really fitting together here. And I would say that as we are looking this entire month at what I'm calling the wisdom under the big top, what I can see is that we're appreciating life with all the richness of our teaching. So we are very, very blessed to be a part of New Thought, and in that spiritual teaching called New Thought, it's been around a long, long time. We have our spiritual teaching, The Science of Mind, that was founded by Dr. Ernest Holmes. And what we have an emphasis on is that idea of growth. It's about personal growth. It's about transformation. It's about the words from biblical words that say, be transformed by renewing your mind. So we have been looking at the marriage of science and spirit long before there was an interest in quantum physics and it became popular in spiritual teachings, as so many authors now show up on the top the top 40 list, whatever, that place I go at Barnes & Noble. When I walk in the door, I always want to see what are the hottest new nonfiction spiritual titles out there. So we provide these great resources through this teaching, and we do have an emphasis on education. That's our primary goal. We're way more educational than, we're not all that religious, you know, but we do see the value of people learning to understand and apply spiritual principle in their own life, the creative process, we call it, how life gets to be the way it is. And so as we focus on ourselves and our own improvement, we then are contributing more to the world, because we're moving through life in a slightly higher perspective. But as we join in community, and we're especially emphasizing that this month in our month of stewardship, of being good stewards for our community and for this teaching and for the future of us being here in the West Valley, then we begin to see that community is more powerful together, that the message becomes stronger when we unite together and share it. And then we join in our organization, our parent organization, Centers for Spiritual Living, where together we have this beautiful vision of a world that works for all living beings. And I love saying that, because it is such a great gift to, in chaotic times, when the world looks confusing, when the weather patterns are a little scary, we can come back to a greater truth, and we can stand in that and know that we are doing our part simply by waking up every day and reaffirming great truth and having joyous expectations for the possibilities for each and every day. So, as we move through this idea of growth and expansion and creativity, the three words we'll be talking about this month, I had this idea because I had been reading. I'll tell you where I got the idea on the whole bacteria thing in a minute, but I was thinking about bacteria as a lesson in climate, because what we can come to realize is there is truly nothing in this universe that doesn't have divine wisdom in it in some way. Now, that's why we have classes, so you can make sense of some of that stuff that might sound a little strange just off the cuff like that. But there is this wonderful way everything in the universe is connected. You know, there's this, I think that the internet helps us understand the web of life, and that my vibration on the web over here, if you played with a spider web in your yard and you took the hose and you sprinkled it with water, you would notice it would vibrate the whole web. And what is that? You know, there's a reason for that. The spider now knows to come out and look and see, is there something yummy that got trapped in the little silky, sticky web? And sometimes I would say we get stuck in this little silky, sticky stuff of life too. But there's this great connection, and there is this great divine wisdom that created all of it, and it makes sense as we study it and apply it into our individual lives. And so what I notice is that some of my very best learned lessons, I can't get there properly, so I'm just going to speak it. Some of the lessons I learned the best in life come from sort of unexpected occurrences or some mysterious circumstances that may or may not make sense to me. And so I had an opportunity this week to see how much divine wisdom I could muster up in my own personal growth and being open to my own lessons while I sat in Boswell Hospital next to my husband for most of the week. So Hugh is home today, and he's doing quite well, and I do not like that role. It's much easier for me to come visit you than it is to hang around all day with my beloved husband. So I got some opportunity to notice that when life throws a little ripple or the web gets a little sticky, that we still have some choices to make. And what happened was immediately, I'm so glad I thought of this, I called I often say my left hand because I'm left-handed. I called Cheryl and said, you need to clear my calendar. I don't know how long I'm not going to be available. So we reprioritize. Some days you wake up and you expect you're going to do this, and you get yourself all geared up to do that, and something comes and changes the direction of your day, and we reprioritize. And magnificently, when we are flexible enough, we are able to do that. It is only when we have a lot of judgment about what's going on that it becomes really sticky and uncomfortable. So what I would say is one of the blessings of being a minister and also of a practitioner is that we are praying all the time. We pray for ourselves. We pray for our community. They're required to pray for their minister every day. Isn't that cool? I get prayers every day. And we are ready to shift our day if we have to and do something brand new. So spiritual opportunities are around us all the time. And sometimes we choose them because we're excited, and sometimes we look for the highest and the best way to move through something that was rather unexpected. And how we do it, nobody matters. It's not like God's up there in a cloud wanting you to make the right decision. It's like you have within you this great infinite wisdom that is always there guiding, directing, protecting. We can take all variations of those words and see that the greatest gift we have is by redefining what we believe God is. Because I tell you this often, but you know, your God is too small. It's time for us to go, whoa, wait a minute, and see, that is the most gorgeous gift of new thought and of this teaching, the science of mind, is that we have a great emphasis on that part of spirituality. You know, when Cheryl's doing the prayer and she says omnipotent and omniscient, and she always throws in one I don't know, whatever, that. So there's this all-powerful, all-knowing, and ever-present thing that we call God. But sometimes because we give it that name, God, and we all have different spiritual and cultural backgrounds, we attach meaning to it that makes us be thinking about different things when we're talking about it. So what I want to say is your God is still too small. I don't care how evolved you are and how good you've expanded and changed your idea of what God is. There's more. There's always more, right? Let me hear a big amen. Thank you. Yeah. So what's cool about this teaching is that that's the very first thing we do. We invite you to that place of like honoring the God of your understanding, but knowing that the more intimate we look for our relationship with the divine and with life, maybe it means we expand the terms we use, that we then find that as we do not see God just as an entity up in heaven somewhere that intervenes if we pray the perfect prayer and remember to say in Jesus' name before we go to sleep at night. Because I used to always forget. That's why I like to say that. I'm teasing myself here. So I would always wake up in the morning and go, oh, darn, the prayer never got there. Oh, is it too late to start over? So what we do is we start to begin to recognize that there's this intelligence in the universe that is always everywhere present. It's right here, right now, and doggone it, it was over there in Boswell Hospital. It was with me when I was driving in my car. It was with me when I was going to sleep at night worrying. And the better I remember that, ooh, the easier my job is for the things that were on my plate to get accomplished. So I would say that if we take this teaching and apply it in a very personal way, as I'm describing here, what we're doing is we're creating a climate in which we're providing a climate, an environment in our own consciousness that is attractive to spirit or to God. But it's not like we're inviting God into the experience because it's already there. All the wisdom, all the truth, all the love, all the divine order, all the perfection is already there. And when we recognize that, where do you recognize it? I recognize it in me. When I recognize that indwelling presence, it's indwelling in my husband, it's indwelling in all my congregants, and it's indwelling in my family members, it's everywhere. Now, oh, my job just got a lot easier. I do not need to be fixing them, whoever they are. So it feels like if we create the climate, it feels like God shows up easier. But what's really happening is I'm going to be more likely to notice, right? I'm going to be more likely to remember. And then my expectation is like right where I am, so is the divine guidance. I know that intelligence is in every doctor, in every nurse, in the person that comes in to clean the room or carry his food, in the wisdom, in the preparation of the food that now will nourish his body. They have menus at Boswell, you know. Many of you know this because I've been to visit you. So I know a lot of you know this. But they have menus, and you have to call in what you want to eat. And on the last day, I'm getting ready to bring him home and the night before, and he called don't tell him I ratted him out, okay? And he said, I want a ham omelet with a side of bacon, please. And as politely as she could, she said, I'm sorry, that's not on the cardiac diet. I looked at him and went, must be the medication has made his brain a little fuzzy. I'm going to just keep it right there. So when I notice that God's right where I am and that God is right where everybody is, then what happens is I begin to have an image of what's possible in terms of the order and the perfection and the revealing of the goodness or the restoration of the health and the vibrancy in the body, whatever it is that seems to be the issue or the concern of the day. And so that then becomes an image I'm thinking about that is the law of correspondence or the mental equivalent, which is what we are talking about on Mondays at 10:30 in the morning or at 6 o'clock in the evening as we go through the little Emmett Fox book. If you were here last week, you got a free copy of that book. If you don't have one, you can still have a free copy, though. So I put the mental equivalent is about putting something in your mind and being very certain that is true, and then by right of consciousness, that something that now has me clear that will then support the environment in which that can be, whatever that is, can be created. So let me say this. If I desire, let's say I just want to have more joy in my life. Okay, would you like a little more joy in your life? All right. Then we want to plant seeds of happiness, right? And we want to pull out any weeds of the things we worry about that are blocking us from that joy. If I want more abundance, if I want a greater experience of prosperity in my life, then I'm going to pull out those weeds of lack and limitation. Anywhere I'm looking in my life and I'm seeing lack or limitation, I'm going to get rid of those weeds, and I want to start focusing on the glorious abundance of givingness of God, the goodness around me all the time. That's where a gratitude practice can really change our lives, because we start to focus on what's good and what greater possibilities we can attract, because we're willing to let our God grow bigger and bigger, our idea of what God is. So there's a way we are staying actively involved in grooming and maintaining our consciousness. I just found this quote just before I walked through the door this morning. Brother David Stindl Rest said, "Joy is the happiness that does not depend on what happens." And man, that is a key element of what I'm trying to communicate this morning. Joy is what happens. Joy is the happiness that does not depend on what's going on at any given time, because joy is a God-given gift. So as we are studying the Emmett Fox booklet on mental equivalent this week, you're going to see some really good illustrations of that. But I wanted to bring one here for us to play with, because I thought it would be really good in this particular setting. So we're going to do a little experiment, and then you're going to read a little more detail about it tomorrow in the little booklet you're studying. But I want you right now to try as hard as you can, give it your best effort, and try not to think of the Statue of Liberty. It's Emmett Fox. I didn't make it up. Emmett Fox did it. It's good, right? So don't be thinking about the Statue of Liberty. Do not be seeing a woman holding a torch. Don't be thinking about that. Don't imagine how green she looks and why. Don't even think about Ellis Island. None of that. Right? Everybody's good. You're not thinking about the Statue of Liberty, right? Yeah. So how many of you have actually seen the Statue of Liberty in real life? Wow, I am a minority. That is a lot of you. Let me see the hands of who has not seen it. Oh, okay. It's not quite that bad, but there's a lot of us that haven't seen it. I have not seen the Statue of Liberty, nor have I been to New York. I haven't been to New York either, but I have seen Niagara Falls, because when I was a young girl, my parents took us to see Niagara Falls, but from the Canadian side. I think it was a boot, the Canadian side. A boot. I probably had my boots on a bit. Okay, or I parked the car in the garage or something like that. Well, that's funny. But I know, it's Phoenix. We probably have a lot of Canadians here. I'm sorry. I apologize. I love you. So I saw Niagara Falls, and I was only like 8 years old. And honestly, I think there are like two pictures I've seen. So it's not like I have it in my mind like from a photo album. But I have such a distinct memory, and for those of you who raised your hand, you will too. Oh, no, that wasn't Niagara Falls. But anyhow, back to Niagara Falls. I have this memory of how cold it was and how wet. You know, it was damp. All that mist was coming up. It was really, really loud. And it's huge. It was just huge. How many of you have seen Niagara Falls? Let me see that. Show of hands. Okay, so all of you went from the Statue of Liberty to the... So, you know, it's cold and it's wet and it's loud and it's huge. And I do like seeing stuff on the Discovery Channel about Niagara Falls. And do you see what just happened? We're not thinking about the Statue of Liberty now. Now, I have given you, if you were paying attention, granted there are a couple of you sleeping still, but those of you who were awake, now you have the image of the Statue of Liberty was replaced with an image of Niagara Falls because our imaginations get going. Because our mind knows how to do that, and our minds are doing that all the time. You forget about one thing as soon as you pop a different idea in your mind. And this is the key. Emmett Fox suggests that this is the key to managing our mind. The way we manage our thoughts is the way we manage our lives. And this is the key to your destiny. Those are the words of Emmett Fox. And so as we look at that, we begin to see in a really simple a way of understanding, we are always participating in our own life based upon what we're thinking about at any given moment. All of our freedom lies in there. That is why he would say your destiny depends upon it. And yet it is a choice whether or not we participate. So Emmett goes on to say, do not dwell on negative things, but replace them with right constructive things. The law of mind requires that you only get rid of one thought by substituting it with another thought, a different thought. And that's the key. Yeah, I was thinking how last week I spoke about the scriptural passage from Proverbs where it says, above all else, guard your heart, guard your thoughts, choose the good you desire and keep your focus there, because that is the wellspring of life. So I just kind of combined three different translations there, but that's why it's so important to put that as a priority in our intention. Now, I would caution you one thing. You got some negative stuff you're worried about. Do not do battle with it. Do not go to war with it by trying to get rid of that negative thinking, because what will happen? You're just going to think more about whatever that problem is or that concern you're having because you've made it so important, because you have it on the forefront of your mind, you might say. And so I was thinking about the way, you know how you get a song stuck in your mind? You get a song, do you know there's a term for it? Earworm. It's an earworm. Do you know where that came from? No. SpongeBob. Not kidding. I looked it up this morning. It was the last thing I did before I walked out the door. It's an earworm, sometimes a brainworm. It's actually called stuck song syndrome. It's a real thing. But you know how that is. You know, somebody goes, oh, is it this song? And you go, no, let me hum it for you. But now you can only hear that song in your head and you can't hear the one you're trying to find. And I don't really think it's much different than when I have lost my keys in the bottom of my purse or somewhere. And I need to leave the house, and you go through your purse three or four times. And then finally, I have to say to myself, stop searching. You know, just give this to God. Take a breath. Know that the keys are right here somewhere, and you will be directed right to them. And then, doggone it, they're right in that place where you've looked three or four times, but it's like we get blind, or there is a special prayer that then makes the little elves bring all your stolen and lost things back to where they belong. I'm not sure which. I'm working on it. So when it comes to our thinking, we can only get rid of that thought, that worm that gets stuck in your brain, by replacing it with something you want in your brain. We have to do that. But we can do that. It's a matter of being very clear in what you're choosing. Which brings me back to the topic of bacteria. I wanted to say this morning that I really have, as I have been a minister for 10 years, 10 plus years now, I observe that, wow, we can scare ourselves with some pretty interesting things. You know, bacteria, for instance. I notice that we can be really seduced by the idea of evil as sort of an entity that can do us harm. And so we do have concern over things like bacteria and germs and diseases and contagious stuff and toxins in the environment. And there's so much going on that we have this great ability to scare ourselves right into poor decisions. And we forget that we have this power and this presence that is indwelling, that we can call on, we can use. It is a power for good. And it's always, always there. So we do other things instead that sort of, sometimes it seems like we amplify the scary part in the effort to try and be safer again. So just notice where you show up in your own relationship to scary things. But the real topic of bacteria came from my ongoing reading of Dr. Frederick Bales, who was a religious science minister in the 50s. And I found this quote in his book, Hidden Power for Human Problems. "Bacteria do not enter our bodies with the intention of destroying us, even though they might. They move in for the same reason people move to certain localities, because they like the climate." Think about that. Now, that's not hard for us to understand right now, because the snowbirds have gone crazy coming home, and it's much harder to park at Fry's now, I'm just saying. Roads are a little more dangerous, it seems, but we love you. We love you all. We're glad you're home, but think about it. We live here. Many of us live here because most of the year the climate is really good, and more people will be moving here. I'm happy to be here. But think about that the bacteria do not enter our bodies to destroy us or hurt us. Nothing is out to get us. I love that Reverend Gary Simmons from Unity says, "Nothing and no one against me. Nothing and no one against me." So Dr. Bale said this. He observes that all of life thrives under certain conditions. All of life. In fact, if we look at the plant life, animal life, humanity, insects, bacteria, you look at all of it, there are three basic functions that is required for all of life. First, we have to acquire nutrients. Second, we have to be able to eliminate waste. And third, we have to be able to reproduce in order to continue the species. So in order for life to continue, there is this way. It just shows up and does what it does. Listen to this quote, Dr. Bale said. "Bacteria bear no hostility toward us. They're actually just minding their own business." They're just doing what they do, right? So, you know, I thought then about that great science experiment we've all had. We've all done this at least once. That great science experiment in your refrigerator sometimes when you lose that Tupperware way in the corner. And I mean, I all of us have probably had that time where we're not even going to open it to see what's in it. We're just going to throw the whole thing away. But if you open it, it's interesting what it looks like. So there's mold. There are all these different kinds of molds that grow in different forms, in different ways, on different foods. Life thrives even in our refrigerators. Isn't that crazy? And then, to make it even a little more weird, you know, I got to say this, it turns out that mold kills some bacterias, and that's why we have penicillin. So there is this great web of life. All of life seeks a proper environment in order to live and preferably to thrive. So we're not special in that way. And we are always, and this is important, we are always attracting or repelling the situations in our life, all the conditions in which we live, the circumstances of our life. We're always attracting or repelling. One of our ministers says, we either create, promote, or allow every experience we have. And if you have trouble wrapping your mind around it, think about a time where you were going through something stinky or difficult, and you put your foot down and said, enough. That is enough. I am not doing this any longer. I'm having a brain. Reminds me of Gone with the Wind, Scarlett O'Hara. I will never be poor again, right? We make up our mind. We have that figurative way we stomp our foot down, draw our line in the sand, and say, no more. I am never going to be treated that way again. And then we show up in a different way, with a raised consciousness, because we have taken a stand for ourselves in whatever regard that might outpicture. So what we are creating in terms of an environment that is attracting or repelling in those things in our life is we're not victims to that. We are called to be participants in this beautiful game of life and to clean out the leftovers in the corners we haven't peeked in a while, to look at our beliefs. This teaching, the science of mind, grooms us to be able to create an internal climate that will attract the good that we desire and eliminate anything that we do not desire. And it corresponds, you hear this all the time, but in the context of this message, I think it's perfect. It will correspond to us exactly at the level we are participating. This is not bad news. This is good news. This gives us rich potential for even things we have not yet imagined. The key always, as Emmett Fox says, is to not dwell on the negative things, but replace them with constructive things. To think as clearly as possible about the good you desire, and then he says, and I want you to have some rip-roaring fun with this tomorrow, get interested in it. Because that's what we teach here. We teach that knowledge and feeling are the two key ingredients. That's how we build a mental equivalent. Knowledge is clarity of thought, and feeling is that warmth of feeling. So Fox says that thinking clearly with feeling leads to demonstration, and that is a powerful affirmation we should all take away today. So, my friends, if you desire to be healthy and happy and prosperous and have a continual expanding idea of what God is and your relationship to spirit and to this universe and to each other, let us stay on this path of expecting good, of being open to the experience of greater and greater good in our lives. Let us, above all else, guard our hearts and our thoughts and the good that we desire, because nothing is out to get us. It is up to us to choose the climate and the environment we desire in our own consciousness so that life will correspond to us in a way that is fabulous. At this time, I would like to call forward all of the practitioners. We will anchor these ideas in the words of prayer.